This is Fresh Air. Charlie Sifford, the first black player admitted into the PGA, the Professional Golfers Association, who was also the first black man to play on the PGA Tour, died Tuesday night at the age of 92. We're going to listen back to my 1992 interview with him. To get into the PGA in 1960, Sifford had to challenge the Caucasian Clause. That clause, which remained in the association's constitution until 1961, stated professional golfers of the Caucasian race over the age of 18 shall be eligible for membership. During Sifford's career, he won over $1 million in official prize money. In 2004, he became the first African American inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. President Obama presented him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom last November. I spoke with Sifford when his memoir, Just Let Me Play, was published. He said then that there was still no place for a black man in professional golf. Of course, that was before Tiger Woods. Yesterday, Woods said, "Without Sifford, I probably wouldn't be here. He paved the way for a lot of us." Here's my interview with Sifford. Your introduction to golf was as a caddy at a country club in North Carolina. It is a country club that blacks were not allowed to be members of. Blacks were not allowed to actually play on the course. So how did you actually learn to play on a whites-only course when you were a caddy?
I guess it's just a gift from God, you know, because I used to get out and I used to, I'm from a very, very poor family. I had my father and mother, they had six kids, and my father was a laborer. And when I'd get out of school in the afternoon, I would go to the golf course, and I just picked the game up. And when I was 13 years old, I could shoot 70, even par, 71, one over par, and it's something like that. It took a liking to the game.
Would you have to sneak onto the course to play, or would they let you play as a caddy even though the course was officially closed to blacks?
Well, we had a day we called Caddy Day Monday. But sometime I would slip out on the golf course, and that's why that the gentleman that owned the Sutton Alexander, very nice man, and God bless him, he passed, and he used to let me take me out and we play, you know, but after all the members of the golf course got the talking about it, so he asked my mother and father if they would let me go somewhere where I could play golf, and that was to Philadelphia. I had an uncle up there, and I went to Philadelphia in 1939.
Because there was a public course nearby that you could play on.
Right, it's still there.
Now, you became Billy Eckstein's golf teacher, valet, and partner on the course.
Mm-hmm.
So you traveled with the band?
Oh, yeah.
That must have been fun.
I was in charge of the musicians, and I was in charge of taking his clothes to the theater. And when I'd take his clothes to the theater, I would head for the golf course, wherever I could find one, and do my little thing.
So, now, Eckstein played golf, and you say that you used to hustle with Eckstein. What were your hustles like?
I taught him how to play golf. We used to go to these different cities, you know, and you know how some of the guys are. You see Billy Eckstein making all this money, so they try to sneak out to the golf course and rob him. So we were prepared for that. We used to go in different places, you understand, and the guys used to call him up to come play. So he said, "Okay, but I had to bring my my chauffeur with me." You know, I was the chauffeur and the pro, too. So we used to go out, and if I see that the guys couldn't beat him, you understand, I'd be playing turkey. I'd be hitting my ball all out through the woods and anywhere until things get real tough, then I would come in, you know.
Now, you say that being the first black on the PGA Tour was one of the most frightening and dangerous things you ever faced. What was dangerous about it?
Well, could you imagine a black man going to North Carolina to play in a PGA-sponsored golf tournament with all white players and one black the first time it ever happened? That's enough to be afraid of. And
were you threatened?
Oh, yes. After the first round of the tournament, I shot 68 and led the tournament the first day. And went back to these friends' house I lived in. It wasn't in the hotels. And the phone rang, and they asked to speak to Charlie Sifford. So I asked the phone. So this guy said, "You're Charlie Sifford?" So I said, "Yeah." So he said, you better not bring your back to the golf course tomorrow. So I told him, I said, well, I tee off at 9:40, and whatever you're going to do, you better get ready to do it because I'll be there. So I went out, teed off, and about 10 or 12 guys started on number one, and it took them to the 14th hole before they could arrest them all.
What were they doing?
Hollering, yelling, calling me names. Didn't hit me, which thank God they didn't. Though I'm sure I wouldn't, you know, may not have been here today as a successful black professional. Well, that's why I said that Jackie Robinson, you understand, he's in a different category to me than he was in a ballpark. See, I'm between those ropes and touchable. You know, anything could happen. But in the ballpark, he's more safer than I were.
Of course, he had a lot of things thrown at him, didn't he?
He had eight guys with him anyway, you know. And I'm nobody but me and 14 golf clubs.
Well, how did you golf that day? You know, there's such a hush that falls over the crowd when somebody is taking their swing, and here you had all these hostile people out to get you who were hollering and insulting you as you were playing. Did you play well that day?
I think I shot 73 that day.
What was par?
71. I played well behind that because, you know, I had made up my mind I was going to go through with it anyway, you know, as long as someone didn't hit me, you know. Ain't nothing they can do to turn me around, you know, to break my concentration and break my determination because I had started and I wasn't going to quit.
Now, what would happen when you would play in a tournament on a course or in a club that barred blacks? Were you allowed in the clubhouse? Were you allowed in the locker room?
At the first beginning, I wasn't allowed in the club, and I wasn't allowed in the I had to go in the locker room to eat. I couldn't eat with them.
When did that start changing?
Oh, it started after 64, 65.
Mm-hmm. How much golf are you playing now?
Oh, I play golf just about every week. I'm playing on the senior tour now, super seniors. I'm a super senior.
That's one of the really great things about golf, isn't it, that you don't have to give it up.
That's right. You can play till you get 100. Of course, if you take care of yourself like me, exercise, train, stay away from the ladies.
Do you feel that you still face discrimination?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I believe that there's, now don't get me wrong, I'm not prejudiced. There's some white people in this country will never accept a black man as a golfer. That's true.
Now, why do you think that is? What is it about golf that has been so resistant?
I don't know. That's what the first, when I was 13 years old and had to leave North Carolina to come to Pennsylvania to play golf, I always wondered why that they didn't want a black man to play golf. I've proved everything. I proved to the world that a black man could play golf and be a gentleman. They never seen me out on the tour with three or four different women. They've never seen me with no women. I've never been with any. They've never saw me bothering any of their wives. So I don't know what they're afraid of. And we outnumbered anyway. If they had 20 blacks out there, well, hell, you got 4,500 whites. So, I mean, you know, well, what is it? We don't have any tails. I just don't understand it.
So what's your next big game?
Oh, I'm going to Charlotte, North Carolina, my hometown, to play next week.
Oh, that's you're not going to be on the course where you got started, are you?
No. No, we built another golf course. I wasn't allowed there either. But that don't bother me anymore. I just go out there and take off my shoes, go in the locker room, do just like the rest of them do, and better not be stopped. They don't. They know who I am, and they know I might fight back now. Before, I wouldn't fight back because I had to prove a point. But the point is proven now, and I'm proud of my book. And I I know that some of the kids that read this book that want to gonna get interested in golf. I know we have some golfers out there. We just have to find them.
Well, I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank me. Thanks for talking to you.
Charlie Sifford recorded in 1992. He died Tuesday at the age of 92.